Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Oh, boy, what a week. And right now there's storms rolling through the bluegrass and throughout the Midwest, really. And for those of you out in western Kentucky, I hope you've weathered it well. And those of us here in northern Kentucky are just starting to get hit. So if I suddenly disappear, hopefully it means nothing horrible has happened. But definitely some wild weather today. So to get things started, as usual, we'll start with the political rhetoric generator. Tonight, political rhetoric randomly generated political rhetoric, easy for me to say, is as follows. Unlike myself, my opponent wants an America where biased media insiders and Somali pirates can take away our innocent babies' smiles. Always love the random political generator. Anyway, if you'd like to call in tonight, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And unless you just want to listen that way, when you're prompted, press the 1 key, and that'll put you in a queue, and Blog Talk will eventually let me know that you want to talk. So a few little miscellaneous things tonight. The first thing I thought was kind of interesting is that Google, a company in Japan has developed glasses that stymie the facial recognition stuff that's becoming more and more prevalent. And I don't know if you guys have seen this. Those of you who use Facebook, it's kind of scary that Facebook is now prompting me when I see a picture of someone with my friend in it to tag my friend. And it knows exactly who they are, and it knows exactly where they are. It's like, hey, would you like to tag them? And it's like, well, wait a second. Why are you asking me to do it? You already know they're there. I mean, is that just to make you feel a little less big brotherish that, you know, you're prompting other people to tag people in photos, or what's the deal? I mean, that's kind of weird that you know who they are, and boy, is that uncomfortable. I mean, I think that's really kind of over the line. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I'm not real comfortable with Facebook and Google and all these things doing the facial recognition stuff on photos, and I think that that's not good for privacy. And I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't. Just kind of weirds me out. I don't know you all, but I'm not a big fan of it at all. Anyway, a company in Japan has come up with some glasses that screw with the facial recognition software that's out there. And essentially, what it does, and this is kind of silly, it puts out light from a almost infrared, or at an almost infrared band of light, and makes it so that the normal person wouldn't see this light on, but the facial recognition software would pick it up because it's picture, and it'll mess it up because it's got this extra light and it's just distorting the picture that it's looking at. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing, and I'm going to have to look into this a little more. I think that that should be that could be a very interesting project to take on and see about, you know, for those who wear glasses and a possibility of, you know, somehow sneaking those in there so they don't look so goofy, because this design, I mean, it looks really funny. If you've ever seen in basketball, when the basketball players have those big safety goggles on, I don't know how else to explain them, but they're big safety goggle-looking things. That's essentially what this looks like right now. It's a big safety goggles-looking thing with a bunch of lights in it. So I think that some improvement's going to be needed to the design to make it so it's not so weird-looking. But I think it is anything we can do to try to protect our privacy, I think is a good thing. I don't feel comfortable with all these facial recognition softwares and all this. I just think that it's a very big problem with all of it. Anyway, moving on. Last week we talked about the parties. We talked about third parties. We talked about a number of things, and I didn't get to quite all the material. We ran out of time, and I wanted to get to some of that, and because some of it's a little bit more general. We talked about the Virginia governor's race. There's been even more numbers that have come out that pretty much definitively show that, the Republicans lost that race all on their own. And in fact, the Republican campaign isn't blaming the Libertarian for his loss. What he's blaming for his loss is that the national GOP basically abandoned him. And, I think that to an extent that's true. If you look at the fundraising and you look at how the money came in, and this isn't off your election, or was, rather, the Republican candidate just didn't bring in as much money as the Democrat candidate. And I don't know if I've ever shared this rule with you all in my audience, but, I've done a lot of analysis of a lot of political races. I mean, I've looked at a lot of races. Not just because of my duties within the Libertarian Party, but just in general. I legitimately find it interesting that if I went back to school, I would like to go into political science. I really honestly find a lot of this stuff just genuinely interesting. Because politics, as I like to say, is policy and, now I've forgotten my own quote. That's terrible. but essentially, it's a popularity contest with policy thrown in to boot. And it's interesting because with a strong enough message, you can get outspent by about 4-1 and still have a chance of winning. If your message is superior and you're able to get it out there and articulate it, right, that's part of having a good message is being able to articulate that message. If you can get that message out there with about 4, even being outspent 4-1, and if your opponent has a bad message or no message at all other than this guy sucks, you should vote for me, which is a pretty common message in elections these days. If you have a strong enough message, you can get outspent by up to 4-1 and still have a chance of winning. Once you get outspent by more than 4-1, you're pretty much toast. And the reason is because at that point you're being flooded in the media and just overwhelmed. And the media is just full of you, of your opponent getting drowned and lost in that. And that also ties into third-party, independent, libertarian, whatever candidate sees. When you're running in a three-way race or a four-way race and the media has already kind of set the tone that two others are it, and the money just isn't there, which is funny because in part the reason the money isn't there is because the media has already set the tone. It's giant chicken and egg problems with the whole electoral system, and I'll go into that in a little bit here, but once you've set the tone, once the media has set the tone, it's very difficult to change the media and change its tone. They start saying it's this versus this, it's this versus this. The media set the tone in that Virginia governor's race that the Libertarian was going to cost the Republican the election. And in many ways, that's why there are still tons of people out there who really do believe that the Libertarian candidate made the GOP candidate lose. The reality is the Republican candidate did not have that strong of a message. Like I said, I watched that race for 4 months. And in the polls for the entire time, that entire 4 months, the Republican candidate sat at high 30 to low 40%. The Democratic candidate was in the low 40s to high 40s the entire time. And the Democrat was just about to cross over 50% when the Obamacare mess all kind of hit, which, you know, whatever. And it was the Democrats that take a hit, certainly. But what we saw is that those people were otherwise Democrat voters that went to the Libertarian candidate. We talked about this. Those votes would have never have gone to the Republican candidate. Those are people who would have otherwise either stayed home or would have held their nose and voted for the Democrat. And the real sad thing about that is that there were a lot of people. I mean, there was a newspaper that actually endorsed, even in the face of the fact that they knew that Sarvis could not win the Libertarian candidate in Virginia. They endorsed him anyway. Pretty powerful. Because the reality is, Sarvis actually would have, or had anyway, a better platform than the Republican and the Democratic candidates. So then it's a question of, what's wrong? Why can't independent and third-party candidates win? And I think that what we're seeing now is a shift. And I talked to a Tea Party group this week about our electoral system and how we've gone through changes through time, how things have changed over time, and why, and what were the main things going on in different periods of history. And basically what they call these things is the party system. Starting from the signing of the Constitution forward, we've had basically five eras of politics. And in each of the eras, there's different themes, there's different things that are going on, and it really wasn't until the beginning of what they call the third party system, the fourth party system, where ballot access rules and different things were changed. And there were some very fundamental changes to the way that we vote that occurred during that period. Previously, you saw candidates running under multiple tickets. So in other words, Bob Jones was running for office, and he may get the endorsement of three or four local parties in the area, whatever. You know, that was pretty common. That was no big deal, right? I mean, that was what they called fusion ticketing, where one candidate would receive more endorsements than just one party. And the reason is because when you used to go to the polls, there'd be people standing outside the polls with pieces of paper and say, hey, you should vote for our ticket. And you've heard the term straight ticket, of course. Well, a ticket used to be a literal piece of paper with a list of names. And what they would do, the paper would be a slightly different color or whatever, and you would go in and put it in the ballot box. And the term splitting the ticket meant that you tore someone out of your ticket. Right, that's what splitting the ticket was. You fast forward to today when the exact opposite is true. Today, you have no one is allowed, right, to electioneer, as they call it, outside the polls. And that was done supposedly to end voter intimidation. You have this party ticket mechanism is just a button on the ballot now, the electronic ballot, rather than being some sort of piece of paper or whatever given to you by a party. So instead of a private party giving you a list or a suggestion list, it's now the government providing the means for that list. And you have it really a focus on party rather than individual candidates. I mean, we've moved a really long way away from where we started. And then on top of that, one of the things I would love to talk about is how the very first Congress there were approximately 33,000 people, and I have to use that in quotes because the three-fifths clause was in effect then, which is horrible and whatever, but it is what it is. There were about 33,000, quote, people that were represented by one U.S. representative. Today, that number is 725,000 people, 725,000 people. By contrast, or as a means of comparison, in the state Senate, excuse me, the state House, Kentucky State House, there are approximately 44,000 people per state House rep. So basically, our today House of Representatives is 33% less representative than the original United States Congress. Our United States Congress is more than, I'm not going to be able to do the math in my head, but about 25 times less representative than it was originally. And what that's done is it's made these races bigger. It's made them require more money. It's made them require, this is all stuff that came about over time, and it changed little by little over time. But it fundamentally changed what we had originally versus what we have now. And it's an important thing to know because people like to talk about the founding fathers. They like to talk about the things that we had and why are things, you know, we want to go back to the way they were. But no one's talking about the real core fundamental things that changed over time. And ironically, many times the people talking about, you know, wanting to go back to the way it was are Republicans who oppose reforms that would put us back to what things were. Meanwhile, Democrats are the ones who, and not the parties, but their supporters, are often the ones talking about, you know, claiming their progressive ideas of making things more democratic and more representative, which really is moving us back towards where we came from. And it is kind of interesting and ironic. And the reality is there are a number of reforms that could be done. A number of reforms that could be done that are really nonpartisan, that could really help the system. I mentioned last week we had an article, it was an op-ed published in Forbes about a Republican Party that can't win versus a Democratic Party that's covered. And I think in many, many ways, that's exactly how many people feel. Essentially, the policies, the talking points of many Republicans are not popular, and specifically the social conservatives who want to bring back draconian social restrictions. Yeah, well, you know, they say that kind of stuff, but that could never happen. Oh, yeah? Take a look at some of the Middle Eastern countries in the 50s and 60s. And then look what happened after they were taken over by extreme religious factions. It can happen. It absolutely can. So Republicans are not popular because of their social con stuff. And I really do think that's the main thing. I don't think it's – the Republican establishment likes to talk about the makers versus the takers and all that garbage. And that might be true to a limited extent, maybe. But quite honestly, I don't think that's the real problem. I think the real problem is that when you start running on a socially conservative platform, and not that there's anything wrong with being a social conservative personally. I am a social conservative personally. I live a socially conservative lifestyle. The difference, though, is that I don't run around trying to impose that on other people. Just because something works for me doesn't mean it works for everyone. And that's the key understanding that Republicans and Democrats both miss. Just because it's right for you doesn't mean you have the right to cram it down somebody else's throat. And I think more and more people are starting to realize this. I mean, again, the Republicans can't win. The Democrats can't govern. We're still in this recession. They're talking about more quantitative easing. We keep talking more and more. That's not going to work. And once again, you know, I started talking with somebody about inflation here. I guess it was at the Tea Party meeting about the inflation and the price of food. And honestly, I just honestly hadn't been shopping in a while. The wife takes care of that. And I was amazed to find out that prices are still going up. And, you know, the other side of it, what was kind of interesting, is that the size of the portions you're buying go down. You know, we had my youngest had a birthday party today. And we made some food for our guests, usually it's kind of a small summer gathering. And we made food, and one of the we made was meatballs. And my wife was surprised. You know, she just went and got the frozen meatballs and warmed them up in the crock pot, but she was surprised at how much smaller meatballs have, the packages of meatballs have become. I mean, it's not even been a year since we bought meatballs the last time. I don't know. I mean, things keep getting worse. And I honestly believe that in part the Republicans don't want to win. And I've had arguments over and over and over. But I don't think the Republicans want to win. I think the establishment Republicans don't mind if they win. But the establishment Republicans don't want the Tea Party Republicans to win. Cuccinelli in Virginia, the Republican in Virginia's race, was not winning. He was running a typical Republican race. In the primary, apparently, he ran more as a Tea Party guy. When he got into the general, his advisors told him to run a more generic race. And so he was for a while. But what that did was it shook his core support. His core support were the Tea Party folks. And so he was getting money from the establishment until he fired his campaign team. His campaign team were establishment folks, my understanding anyway. And once he fired them, the national money dried up. They basically said, okay, you're a Tea Party guy, you're done. We're not going to play ball. And we've seen the stories that have come out. I'm looking at one here from the Washington Times. I think this is from last week. Yeah, a week and a half ago. About the GOP establishment declaring war on the Tea Party faction. And that the GOP is out raising money from the business community to primary the so-called Tea Party leaders in the House and Senate. Now, I knew this was coming, and I called this all along. And it's kind of funny because there were a lot of people, oh, no, they'd never do that. Really? Really? You not studied your history? But essentially now, we have the establishment striking back against the Tea Party. Meanwhile, the Democrats, I don't even know what they're doing. Quite honestly, they don't seem to be doing squat. They seem to be completely paralyzed, which gets back to that whole can't govern thing. It's amazing that more people aren't upset. That's what's amazing to me. We're in what, year five, almost year six of this recession now. Things still aren't better. Anybody knows it. Everybody knows it. From a individual wealth perspective, 95% or more of the country has moved backwards and continues to move backwards. things aren't getting better. Things are not getting better. And I think that's why we're starting to see results like we saw in Virginia. I think that's why we're starting to see a rise in the number of independents, and not just a rise in independents, because that's been happening for a while, but a rise in the number of vocal, angry, and rightfully so angry, independents, whatever. Things aren't getting better. They're not. And now, as third parties and independents are poised to strike, poised to benefit, and understand it's a mutual beneficial thing, right? The third parties and independents are promising a new direction outside of the establishment of the Republican and Democratic parties. At that same time, to quell that, the Republican and Democratic parties are working to lock down electoral access even further. In Ohio, they've just passed a law making it very difficult for any third party or independent to get onto the ballot. Previously, the law, which had been very draconian, such as what has been passed, was struck down by the courts as being too draconian. And so the Libertarian Party has been growing because they've been able to run more candidates for office. They've been able to put their message out there. That's how you grow a party. Well, because John Kasich has done some things that have really made a lot of Tea Partiers very angry in the state of Ohio, and because one of the guys who was big in the Tea Party is now big in the Libertarian Party and has officially declared, when he declared he was running for governor of Ohio as a Libertarian, they rushed this bill through the legislature as an emergency provision. Emergency provision. To make it so that it was much, much harder to get on the ballot. Now, that's not an emergency. That's just silliness. That's not an emergency. Emergency provisions are supposed to be for true emergencies. Things like, oh my gosh, we're out of money, or oh my gosh, half our state's underwater, or oh my gosh, half our state burned down. You understand what I'm saying? That's an emergency. They passed an emergency because they realize the Republicans in control of the legislature and the executive branches in Ohio, they realized that they're in trouble and that libertarians do pose a threat to them electorally. And therefore, they're making it harder for libertarians to run, or anybody else, independents, greens, anybody. They want to lock it down to you only get to choose between Democrats or Republicans. And you end up with a fight over who's the worst and voting against the worst rather than voting is the best. Take a break here at the bottom. When we come back, we'll continue with this and then also some Obamacare stuff. Your calls are welcome at area code 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. And when we return, we'll continue. Folks, stay tuned. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network.
first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And during the break, we had a caller call in, and we're going to bring him on right now. Don, you are on the air.
Okay, Ken, and thank you very much for putting me on the air right now. As you know, they're doing the same type of nonsense to us in Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have to do some type of payback to these guys. And I see Karl Rove, of course, as being the head of all of this. I don't know whether or not Karl Rove is working with or against the Koch brothers. Have you heard anything about that?
I have no idea on that front.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. One thing that we can do against these people is that, all right, they're putting something together called, what, the Main Street Coalition or something like that. And I'm sure we could get, let's say, the names of the people who are donating to Mr. Rove and his PAC. I'm sure that Grover Norquist would probably help us in this regard. And it's important to know that the people who are working against us, they probably own businesses, maybe involved in, you know, certain organizations or whatever. But we want to make things uncomfortable for them. For example, if they own some type of retail business, perhaps we could put together some type of boycott against them. Now, as you know, the Tea Party hates Karl Rove, and so does the Christian right.
Well, I honestly don't know where – yeah, I'm here. I don't know where Karl Rove stands as far as from the Christian right perspective. I do know that the Tea Party – not big fans.
Well, I know that, but, you know, the thing is that Karl Rove has just made things so bad for himself that he can't even be on Fox News anymore.
I haven't kept track of old Karl's movements lately, so
okay.
Actually, I guess that is true, though. I have not seen him out much news lately.
Well, he started, like, really rambling on the election night, you know, claiming that Obama didn't really win and there were more returns coming in from Ohio. And basically the people who were the news hosts and had him on basically gave him a new one, if you understand what I mean by that. So he put together a PAC for 2012. He supported about 9 candidates. 8 lost. And so it's not that he has a very good track record. I think he's going down. But here's the thing. I think that the people who are supporting him should feel our wrath. I mean, it's not just Karl Rove, but, you know, get to these people as well. And so, you know, somebody listening to us, I hope, will do the research on this. And try and find these people, you know, and how much they give and all of that. And, you know, we'll let them know that we're organizing a boycott against these people. We'll let the Tea Party people know about this as well. And let the games begin.
Well, certainly I think that there's a place to say that, you know, no bad behavior should go unpunished. And I think that a lot of what's going on here, and it's really interesting because it's the Republican establishment types that are always talking about how you should never primary a an elected Republican, because at the time anyway, they were the ones in control. And in fact, they went so far as in Alaska, was that 2010, when Mitch went up and saved Murkowski running as a write-in after she lost the Republican primary to Joe Miller. I mean, that's how far they went to protect their little clique. And I guess the point is that there does need to definitely be some sort of change. There has to be some sort of behavioral change on the part of the Tea Party, on behalf of the libertarians, and really, for that matter, you know, Don, this is not just a Republican thing either. You know, what's interesting is that the Occupy Wall Street folks kind of meandered away, and I don't know where they went, but, you know, they never really got what they wanted either, and I would hope that they haven't just disappeared into the night, that, you know, they continue to push for what they wanted, because despite what talk radio and some, you know, talking heads said, you know, the Occupy Wall Street folks had some very legitimate concerns and complaints that really should be addressed. And in many ways, if Occupy and T could come together, they would be an unstoppable force. And I think that's what's really happening. I think we're getting to a point that if some of the grassroots movements can get away from the parties, you're going to see a radical shift in how politics are done in this country.
That's true. And one way that is coming together is that there is something called the TPP Treaty, which is kind of like NAFTA for the Pacific. And, and I don't know whether you've talked to your audience about this, but it very little concerns trade. It's basically if a country has environmental safeguards or even safeguards of internet privacy and such that we have here, then this basically is a way of kind of imposing a kind of an international SOPA, as I understand it. And I know that Reason has come out against it. The Internet Freedom groups have come out against it. A lot of the left-wing groups have come out against this as well.
Yeah.
And from what the last I've heard is that this thing is very much in trouble because a lot of people are emailing their congressmen and senators and saying, please do not do this.
Good.
And so, you know, it's good on that. I mean, I do know, for example, that a lot of people gave us kudos because of, you know, Rand Paul being against the war in Syria. And just today I saw in Mother Jones a really good article about Justin Amash and his fight against the NSA. And I think that there's a lot of people who in both the Republican as well as the Democratic Party are scared shitless about a coalition of supposedly left and supposedly right-wing people working together against both the Republicans and Democrats. And they're doing everything they can to stop it.
Yeah, well, make no mistake, Don. I think you're exactly on there. You know, there was a point where Occupy and Peace started to talk back in 2011. There were some groups that started to talk. And as soon as word of that came out, all of a sudden, especially on the right-wing side, the talking points just started coming out, you know, talking about how, you know, convincing the Tea Party that talking to Occupy was insane and that they were, un-American and all this stuff. And I think they did that to, you know, whenever the people try to come together to actually solve our problems, there are certain wedge issues that the parties use to drive us back apart. And we're going to have to get over those wedge issues because the reality is, nobody ever solves those wedge issues, because if they did, they wouldn't be able to use them again. On the Republican side, they love to use abortion as a wedge. But the Republicans had complete control of Congress and the executive branch from 2001 to 2007, and what did they do? Nothing. because they're not serious about it. They're using it as an issue, which personally I find to be more offensive than anything else. That if you really believe that it's murder and you do nothing to stop it, then that is more offensive than anything. So the point is that what we're seeing, and there was a new poll that came out at the end of October that showed the majority of Americans do not belong to either party. And we've seen that for a while, right, that the number of people as unaffiliated has continued to rise. But what's interesting about this poll that's new is that 63% of voters want to replace their own member of Congress. And that's a new stat that they've only apparently been tracking since 1992. But it's the highest ever because in the past, you would see people, you know, Congress would have a 14% approval rate, right? But the people of a particular district would be like, well, but my guy's good. We just need to get rid of the other 434 of them. I want to keep my guy. This represents a pretty significant shift in that there are a lot of people that want to get rid of their own representative. And that is an interesting scenario. You know, the real problem is that these races, these U.S. congressional races, are so darn big. You have to reach out, you know, your constituency is technically 725,000 people. You figure you break that down, it's more like a 500,000 adults. You break that down, and now you're at 350,000 people registered. And of the people who are likely to vote then, you're down somewhere around, oh boy, I'm trying to do this math in my head, it's not quite happening, 220,000 people, roughly. But to reach 220,000 people the correct number of times, you're talking about a minimum of about $5 per person, which means you got to have about $1.1 million. Don, I don't have $1.1 million. You got $1.1 million?
Well, this goes into the whole issue that, you know, politicians are now so expensive and they have to sell out to all the various established interests because it costs $1 million at least to win a congressional campaign, especially if you're trying to come in from the outside.
Yes.
And I don't think that limits, you know, would work. And whether or not we should even bother discussing the whole issue, it kind of leads one to the conclusion that there should be, shall we say, gerrymandered districts so that they're all heavily Republican or all heavily Democrat or whatever. I don't know. But as long as there's all this power involved in the government, then, of course, it's going to cost millions and millions of dollars to get any type of change done.
Yeah,
and a lot of people are just, you know, throwing up their hands. And people are now beginning to understand, too, that libertarians, because we can't get what we want, are just basically pushing gridlock.
Yeah, I don't know if we're necessarily pushing gridlock. I think gridlock, and this is a whole other discussion, but gridlock for the sake of partisan gridlock is bad, right? I mean, I don't want to do this because a Republican said it. Right, or I don't want to do this because a Democrat said it, which is what we see today. For the most part, the gridlock we see, especially in Frankfurt, is built on partisanship, not on politics or policy. Right? It's more about, well, I can't let the Democrats get credit for this, or I can't let the Republicans get credit for this. We see that in Frankfurt. I think that gridlock, for the sake of this, is not good for a large enough section of the country that people stand up and say, no, thank you. Then I think that's the type of gridlock that we like to see. And I think that that's an important distinction to make because whenever people go around and just say we like gridlock, people are thinking about the partisan gridlock that's built nothing on other than personality conflicts and party loyalty. Whereas we're talking about,
I don't think the objection is this, is that people are trying to plan their lives, okay? Various, you know, if you have a business, you have various costs, you're trying to assume certain regulations or whatever. And like this whole thing with Obamacare and all that, I mean, if, you know, like Obama just announced that in despite of everything he said just a couple weeks ago, he now wants a one-year delay. And God knows what's going to happen the next year. So therefore, this gridlock means in a sense that nothing is being settled right now, so therefore people cannot make any type of financial plans, and this drives everybody up against the wall.
Not only that, it just prolongs the recession. But go ahead.
Yes, Yeah. And so people really don't know, you know, what is going to happen. There's no real discussion of the issues about this. As we've talked before, the Republicans just did not know how to handle the gridlock issue, did not know how to handle the whole health insurance issue. And it's just, you know, really the whole thing seemed very half-assed from what I could see. And, you know, nobody seems to want to, you know, discuss, you know, the libertarian approach to things. So to me, we have to make some type of alliance with the Christians and the Tea Party people, stating that we know that we have to change the culture, and to do that, we have to get the government out of education, out of health care, out of welfare, and all the other things that government does, and just privatize it. And, you know, the Democrats, of course, are going to, you know, have their own all-or-nothing approach and things like that, too, and some of the Republicans don't like us, and they're trying to sabotage what we do because we know that our agenda is just more than that. We want, you know, we're against government spying and the military spending and all that kind of stuff, too. So, and, you know, all these people who are criticizing the Tea Party and stuff like that, I mean, I've always thought that the Tea Party, in a sense, functioned as a small L libertarian organization, or at least it does in Kentucky.
Some don't. It depends on the Tea Party. I can tell you for a fact, even here in Kentucky, there are Tea Parties that are very focused on taxes and spending, and there are other Tea Parties that are just angry Republicans that can't use the Republican name because the brand has been so badly broken. I mean, that's there's a lot of those people that are actually just straight-up Republicans. They're the old Republicans, old Reagan Republicans that are just mad because the – and rightfully so, because the establishment doesn't even do what the Republican platform says, which, by the way, I posted something earlier on Facebook. You know, there's this isidewith.com website where you can go and – answer a bunch of questions, and it matches you up with presidential candidates from 2012 was what it was really for. But it also matched people up with candidates for – or excuse me, it matched people up with the party's philosophies. And what I found was interesting is that when I took it, I scored an 80% with the Libertarian Party, which is the highest, right? And I have told people I'm not a pure libertarian, and that's whatever.
Yeah.
And then I agreed with Gary Johnson at 83% and Ron Paul at 79%, right? That makes sense.
Okay. Right.
But in theory, the next thing I agreed with, party-wise, was the Republican Party at 60%, you know, according to their platform. Yet somehow, I only agreed with 27% of Mitt Romney. You know, same answers to the same questions, man. I mean, it's the same group of questions, and they just apply them different ways. And the point is that a platform, a philosophy is one thing, but who is actually out there running is another. And that's one of the big problems we have is that when you get into this lesser of two evils game, when you're forced into that, and I talked to the Tea Party about this, because the Tea Party folks, they weren't hot to trot about Romney either. You know, what was the big thing that the Republicans said about Romney? Well, he can win. Whoa, boy, I'm excited now. He can win. Not he can fix things. Not he's got a plan. Not he's going to do something awesome. It's he can win. Whoa.
Well, there's something else there, too, you know.
They were wrong about that, too.
I understand that, too. But you see, what they might have said as well is Romney might not win, but he's not going to lose extremely badly. I mean, they might have thought, let's say, if Ron Paul was a nominee, he might only get, let's say, 40% of the popular vote, which would have been a disaster in some measures.
But see, I don't know if that's necessarily the case either. I mean, you look at, first of all, you know, the popular vote's one thing. The Electoral College is what really matters. And the Electoral College finally got destroyed, man. I mean, it was bad. I was honestly shocked at how bad it was. That was another race where I was really shocked. I expected it to – what did I have Romney? I'm trying to remember now. It's been so long. But I had Romney at something like 50 or so. He was going to lose by 50 or so electoral votes, and he actually lost by like 90 or 120 or something. It was a lot. And the point is that we're corralled, and they try to preserve this lesser of two evils game to force us to vote for somebody who's not even for what their party label says they're for. And we had this article that came out from Thomas Sowell this past week about how, you know, the Tea Party's at a crossroads, and they have to decide what they're going to do, and, boy, they need to get on board with the establishment plan and quit being such an ugly insurgent force to the Republicans and all this. And it's like, no, no, man, that's not at all what they need to do. And I, you know, one of the big things I'm pushing now, and this is where I wanted to get at least tonight with the show, we're not going to get to Obamacare at this point. We've only got a few minutes left. But one of the big things we can push for, it's been proven constitutional and it's easy for voters to understand, is instant runoff voting. Instant runoff voting is
great
really,
idea.
Really simple. You walk into the booth, you say, I like this person the best, they're my number one choice. I like this other person second best, if my first guy doesn't win, second guy, yeah, okay, number two. And you can keep going down the list as far as you like until you reach somebody that you don't like, right? And then you say, I'm not voting for them at all. And that's essentially what that does, and I did this with the Tea Party folks this week, is I made a list of every president that's ever served, and I said, I want you to rank these people, you know, based on if you would you like to have for president today, right? And you can go as far down as you want, but start with number one and go as far as you want. And, you know, basically, and it was a smaller crowd because it's getting here and whatever, but essentially what came out of it was that turns out most of them went George Washington, by the way, who won in the third round of voting. I mean, it was actually pretty cool. You know, the people who had the most votes were Ronald Reagan, Thomas Jefferson, and George Washington. And in the first round, it was really, really close. And there were a few others and whatever. And essentially what came out of it was it came down to Jefferson versus Washington after the second round, and Washington won in the third round. And, again, you know, that's a scenario where when you have the instant runoff, it takes away the lesser of two evils. It takes away the vote splitting as well. So the reason that we don't have instant runoff today is that it gets rid of the lesser of two evils game. And make no mistake, the Republicans and Democrats count on scaring the individual voters into corralling them into, well, you got to vote for me to vote against that guy. And that's their whole game plan, especially on the Republican side, but the Democrats do it too. That's their plan. Scare the voters into voting against someone else. That's the problem with a two-party system. A two-party system is not about what's best, but what's least bad. And that's not good. So go ahead, Don.
Last question is that they really hate us, but I have not seen any attacks by Rove and company against libertarians per se, and I read the Weekly Standard, National Review, and whatever, and it seems that either they have nothing to say or they just don't want to offend us too badly. Have you seen anything, in a sense, by the Republican establishment attacking libertarians and Ron Paul? I can see them attacking the Christian right because abortion obsessionism, you know, is going to cost Republicans votes. And I can see them wanting to stop that.
I think this is the point. And Don, I'm going to put you back on. Thank you for your call, because we only have a few minutes left. I want to wrap
sure,
up with
ahead.
That. So I think from the establishment side, they lump libertarians, Tea Party, basically anybody who's not them is the Tea Party. And they do that, and it's hilarious to see that, because it's like, no, that wasn't the Tea Party that did that. Up here in Northern Kentucky, there's a small business group that started up because the chamber, its genesis was that the chamber supported a smoking ban, so a bunch of small businesses got together and basically started their own chamber organization because the chamber wasn't representing them. And the point, I guess, is that they were considered a Tea Party group, even though they were just business owners, small business owners, because they weren't on board with the establishment plan, their Tea Party. And they, the establishment sees anybody who is not a Democrat and who is kind of sort of Republican in their mind, and that includes libertarians, as Tea Party by all of them. So when they say they're going to go to war with libertarians, or excuse me, with Tea Partiers, they're talking to us too. We're included in that. And they are going to go to war with all of us. And we've seen that. Again, the ballot access restrictions new in Ohio. The ballot access restrictions that are new in Arizona to try to keep people off the ballot. not because it makes voting better. How does that help people to take away options? That doesn't help anything. If they're really worried about vote splitting, which is in essence what the Republicans that voted for this, this all came down immediately following the Sarvis race in Virginia, where the original media reports were saying that the Libertarian cost the Republican the race. The Republicans then crammed it through and convinced all the Republican legislators that that was why it was necessary, because Libertarians were splitting their votes. Well, first of all, it's a terrible, terrible, terrible reason to take choices away from voters. But more importantly, there are other ways to solve the problem. Better ways. Instant runoff voting. If you're interested in learning more about instant runoff, you can Google instant runoff voting. The other thing you can do is go out to fairvote, fairvote.org. That's a good place to go as well. Folks, there are better ways to conduct elections, ways that are fair, ways that increase voter choices without the fear that the two major parties intentionally put in place to corral you for the least bad rather than for the best. We have to start voting for the best. Voting for the least worst is what we've been doing for years, and what has that gotten us? Are we just sliding into nothing a little slower? Woo, that's something to get excited about. We have to do better. We have to demand better. An instant runoff is just one very good way to get that done. Folks, we're out of time. Thank you very much for tuning in. Tune in again next week. Listen to the other shows on the network, 7 p.m., Sunday through Thursday. Have a good week, folks. You are listening to the Mind View Matters Radio Network. Can't speak tonight.